Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Sunday, and that means it's time for our Zen stream. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first, I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of consciousness that create it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your reality and your life through mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to say that if you find the content of this podcast helpful, I hope that you will consider sharing it with others. That's a wonderful way to support the podcast and share the mission of the podcast. All right. So we have a few series here on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism. We have our Zen stream on Sundays like today. And I do often try to throw in an extra episode weekly, usually on a topic related to mental health. That is my professional background, for those of you who are new here. I've been a psychotherapist now for about 16 years, so you will hear topics like mindfulness, meditation, relationships, mental illness, self-help, basically anything and everything that helps you reach your goals, achieve your dreams, and just live an overall happier day-to-day life. Now, today being Zen Stream, we are going to be talking about Zen Buddhism. And interestingly, just yesterday, we did a one-day retreat with the Zen school that is near me. Thing I'm so grateful that I have a Zen school near me. I know not everyone has that. I'm very grateful to have that. And it's a Korean school. Been going to that school now for, about 10 years, give or take. Yeah, about 10 years. And before that, I was in a Japanese school for about 3-4 years. So anyway, we did this retreat yesterday, and I wanted to share with you some of the stuff that came up for me during the retreat. We did have a Zen master working with us, and of course, this was all done virtually through Zoom. So my wife and I, you know, we have a Zendo, you know, little, that's a, I just say those things like you know what it is. It's basically a room, an area set aside for, you know, your meditation. So my wife and I, we basically went through the whole retreat virtually. And it was actually more effective than I thought it would be. You know, at first I was a little bit, this is the first one I've ever done virtually. And I was a little bit, you know, maybe coming into it with expecting it not to be as effective. And maybe it's not quite as effective, but it was still quite effective. It was actually very good. Something about seeing everyone's face, you know, on the screen and having the Zen master with us and just basically, truth be told, just sitting in silence for that long was just, you know, very, very, very helpful. And I wanted to come on here, being that today is our Zen stream, and just share a little bit about my experience and share what came out of it for me. And two things I want to share, and they're related to one another. So the first thing is control. And this is, by the way, I always like to draw this distinction just to be clear as possible. And we all know how words can be interpreted in many, many different ways. The way words can be interpreted, in fact, are as varied as there are minds on this planet. We all come in to situations and to talks like this with our own reference point, our own internal beliefs, our own way of filtering things that we hear. So I always try to be, if you've listened to my podcast for a little while, you know, I always try to be very careful in how I say things. I try to be as clear as possible. So first thing I want to just say as a point of clarification, maybe you could say a little bit of a disclaimer. When I talk about control here, okay, and a lot, this also applies to a lot of the things actually that I discuss on the podcast, I'm not so much. I mean, there is some. You can't draw hard and fast lines here. But I'm not so much talking about control over your quote-unquote external world, meaning, you know, having control over your personal safety, your, you know, your income, the health and well-being of your loved ones, you know, your own kind of well-being, like your own, for example, health, meaning exercise, diet. Those are things that I think we do need to, as responsible adults who live in a practical world, we need to take some responsibility, and we need to behave in a way that maintains some semblance of control, right? So, you know, you get paid, you should have a budget, right? I'm kind of talking about common sense here, okay? You need to have a budget to have some control over your income. Now, of course, in ultimate reality, we are never fully in control, right? We're never fully in control. And that's one of the biggest struggles I think human beings contend with, and that is we're always, even if it's unconscious to us, we are always avoiding or fighting against that sense of being out of control, which therapeutically, psychotherapeutically, is also called helplessness, the feeling of being helpless. And we have all faced situations in which we have felt helpless over something that is happening to us or something that someone we love, and there's just not anything we can do about it. That's a very, very difficult situation. And much of what we do in our lives, in our day-to-day, moment-to-moment life, we do it in order to maintain, again, even if it's unconscious to us, we do it in order to maintain a resemblance of control, of having some kind of control over our lives. And you can trace this back hundreds of thousands of years to early man. And we are going to talk a little bit here. Like I said, where this whole thing kind of started, I said control was one thing that came up. I said there were two things that came up, right? Control and something I think that can help us when control goes a little bit out of control, meaning that I'm sure we've all met people who are overly controlling. We all, I think, have certain tendencies, maybe in certain areas of our lives, we're more controlling than in other areas. But one of I don't know if it's technique is the right word, but one of the perspectives that came out of yesterday's retreat that I think can be helpful here is this concept of the don't know mind. And that's something that was spoken about yesterday by the Zen master we worked with. Her name is Bobby Rhodes, by the way. But she alluded to over and over again this don't know mind, and what is the purpose of holding, I'm not even sure if holding is the right word, but sort of staying in alignment with this don't know mind. What is don't know mind? And in a way, we're going to get there. Okay, we're going to get there. But in a way, it is sort of the antithesis of the point to which our minds can get when our desire for control starts getting out of control. Okay, and it's one of those paradoxical things, like often come up in Zen practice and in Taoism. When we talk about Tuesday Taoism, we see a lot of paradox as well. That a lot of times, when we are trying to exert too much control, things get actually more out of control. It actually reminds me, it's kind of funny. This always comes up for me. I don't know why. I grew up on Star Wars Generation. And there's a very good line. I believe it's in episode 4, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. But one of the episodes, Leia's talking to, I forget his name, one of the officers in the bad guys, the Empire. And she says to him, the more you squeeze your hand, the more slip through your fingers. And she's basically talking about the control that the Empire is trying to create, you know, within the universe, their universe, whatever. But I really like that metaphor of the squeezing of the hand. And the tighter you try to squeeze, to hold on to something, if you squeeze too much, more and more starts to slip out through your fingers. I think that's a very good metaphor. for the type of control that I'm talking about here. So again, going back to that disclaimer, that distinction that I wanted to make is I'm not so much talking about our general kind of practical day-to-day kind of control that we have over our lives, right? We need some of that, right? You need to know where your food is coming from. You need to know where your money's coming from. You need to know that your family is safe, that you have a roof over your head, that you have, you know, your loved ones are safe, that kind of thing, okay? I'm not talking about that kind of control. I'm referring more to the type of control that we exert over our own emotions, over our own thoughts, over our own, in some cases, our own behaviors, okay? Because I do think in this day and age, we tend to, I'm speaking now to, I guess, all of the perfectionists out there, all of the people who hold very high standards for themselves or for others. We can become our own worst critic. And we can even beat ourselves up for feeling a certain way or thinking a certain way. And then we create this second layer of kind of negativity. And again, the underlying motive for all of this is that we want to be quote unquote better people, right? We want to improve ourselves. We want to somehow become a better human being, you know, or have better, you know, things in our life. And again, there's a time and place for everything. But what I find is that for many of us, I think especially in the United States and Western civilization or culture in general, we tend to go a little overboard with this stuff. We really do. And I even think it's somewhat rampant in certain self-help communities where, you know, people are just being very, very controlling with everything that they're thinking, everything that they're feeling. We have a general unease. I think probably 90% of human beings, we have extreme aversion to any kind of negative feelings, sadness, fear. Again, helplessness comes up again. We hate feeling those things. And so we begin to struggle internally with the fact that we have these feelings because we're human. And that on one end, and on the other end is a desire to not have those feelings, okay, which we can also call aversion. So this can set up a lot of internal conflict, a lot of discomfort, and a lot of anxiety, really, and I think also depression it could lead to quite a bit as well. So I'm going to continue talking about this in a minute, and I want to tie into how this don't know mind can start to help us if you're struggling with this kind of issue. So just bear with me a minute. Let me just pause for a word from a sponsor and I'll be right back. All right, everyone. Thanks for your patience. Let me just take a moment here to tell you that if you ever want to reach out to me to ask a question, make a suggestion, express a concern, or if you have an idea for a future podcast episode, feel free to email me at elucidatetherreal@gmail.com. You can also hop on over to YouTube, search for my channel. It's the same name, Dreams Warp, two separate words. Find any one of the videos, doesn't matter which one, post a comment under it. I get a notification right away and can hop on over to YouTube and respond to you there in the comment section. Finally, you can find me on Twitter if you want to reach out to me. You could send me a direct message there. And while you're there, might as well follow me. I do try to post things there regularly that I think serve as nice reminders throughout the day to focus on your practice, focus on your breath, focus on the present moment. So make sure you follow me there on Twitter to get that good stuff. And if you are on Apple Podcasts and you are listening to this and you're enjoying the content, I hope you could take a moment, leave a nice rating and review. That's another wonderful way to support the podcast. All right, so we're talking about control, and we're talking about this don't know mind and how the don't know mind can serve as in a very simplistic way to put it, a sort of a medicine for this overly controlling tendency that a lot of us can slip into with our own thoughts, our own feelings, and our own desire to be better, right? to reach goals, to have a better life. And there, like I said a little bit ago, time and place for everything. We do have goals. That's normal. We have things in our life that we wish to improve. Again, normal. This is not so much about getting rid of those goals. This is more about how we can work toward attaining those goals without causing so much internal conflict. which can in turn prevent you from even reaching those goals in the first place. So this is about ultimately managing your sort of internal space, okay? And I always use quote unquote sort of, you know, so-called, those kinds of terms when I'm talking about internal and external. And I say that because internal and external ultimately arise still from this dualistic mind. And in ultimate reality, there is no distinction between internal and external. As Buddha said 2,500 years ago, give or take, all the world is mind. And I agree with that. But again, for purposes of getting this information across, for purposes of just practical and language, we need to sometimes draw these distinctions in order to understand what we're talking about. So when I say internal space, I'm talking about your thoughts, your feelings, your internal mental constructs, that kind of thing. And when I say external, I'm talking more about our physical world and the components of our physical reality, including the various areas of our lives, finances, health, family, work, that kind of thing. And I do try to touch on both internal and external stuff here on the podcast. Oftentimes, though, I must admit, more internal. So we're talking here about this desire to control. And let's just back up a little bit and talk a little more about the origins of this, and because I think it can help when we're looking at don't know mind and how to apply it. So again, as I mentioned a little bit ago, we go back a couple hundred thousand years. Mostly we're hunters, gatherers, and our main concern, in fact, our chief and only concern, is survival, physical survival, right? So we have the elements to contend with. We have wild animals to contend with. We don't have very good medicine back then. So really, we're not at that point. Have you ever heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs? I don't want to go off on a total tangent here and talk about that for too long, but look it up if you don't know about it. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, in a nutshell, basically says that for us to achieve this point called self-actualization, which you could say is sort of like enlightenment, you know, happiness, you know, a sense of feeling fulfilled, whatever. There's a hierarchy. There's levels of things that need to be taken care of first. And the most bottom level, it's a pyramid, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The bottom level is basic needs, food, shelter, health, right? The very, very basic needs. It's very hard, conventionally, to work on being happy when you don't have a place to live, you have no food to eat, you're in terrible health, right? It's just kind of common sense. So as you move up the hierarchy, you know, you get into things like relationships, you get into things like, you know, feeling successful, you know, those kinds of things. Okay, I don't want to digress too much here, but you could look it up if you want to learn more about it, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So you go back a couple hundred thousand years, we're on the bottom of this kind of pyramid, right? We're worried about shelter, we're worried about food, we're worried about the elements, we're worried about nature, this is evolutionarily back then our primary concern. We're not so much back then, you know, focused on fulfillment, on being happy, on being enlightened, on, you know, higher mental things, on art, on these kinds of things, right? We're focused on just staying alive. So this very much ties into our instinct for survival, which we still all have, right? It's very, very deeply rooted program in our biology is to stay alive. That's like imperative, job one, stay alive. So that is very much an ongoing thing that is working in us. It's just very, very, very much, for most of us, very much unconscious, okay? The only time that really surfaces is perhaps if you're in a life or death situation, and suddenly I've talked to many, many patients with whom I've worked who've been through life or death situations, traumas, and you know, at that moment, they all pretty much agree that, you know, you're not thinking in that moment of whether or not you're happy, whether or not you're fulfilled, whether or not, you know, your artistic endeavor is going to work out. All you're worried about is staying alive. That's it. And that overrides everything, okay? It's like an override switch. That's what we call our fight-flight response. So it's always there. It's always there. It's just kind of out of the way when you're not in a life death situation? Well, you go back a couple hundred thousand years, we're almost always in that situation, dealing with some kind of thing like that. So it's much more active, okay? But what's happened over time, and this is something that Eckhart Tolle talks a little bit about in his book, Power of Now, is that the urge for the desire, survival, to stay alive, it hasn't disappeared, but it's sort of now, and this has always been such a challenge for me to explain clearly, I'm going to try again, it's sort of evolved into not just survival of our physical bodies, but it's now turned into a survival of our own beliefs, of our own emotions, of our own thoughts. So you see this oftentimes, like I mentioned, I think it was in yesterday's podcast episode or the day before, I'm not sure. It must have been the day before because yesterday I was doing the retreat. But you see people like in social media, like fighting with each other over different opinions, and it's crazy. They fight like it's life or death. Like somehow they're gonna be dead or something if they don't win this argument. It's like so like strong and powerful. And what it is, it's sort of like a taste of this survival instinct coming out in a way to defend a belief system, right? So we've kind of like taking our belief systems to be an extension of ourselves. It's like part of who I am. That's what I believe, right? And it becomes so important that almost like our survival instinct, since it no longer really has to, for most of us, doesn't have to really worry about our physical survival, it has evolved. Now it reacts similarly, maybe not to the same degree or intensity, but it reacts in a very similar way when it comes to, instead of our physical bodies being challenged, our beliefs being challenged, or our emotions being challenged, or our behaviors being challenged. We react in this very, very kind of fight, flight, response looking kind of way. And so this is the type of control that we need to take a look at, is that we have such a strong, that desire for control, it's born from that same desire for survival. Right. So when we're going back a couple hundred thousand years, our primary concern was to have some kind of control over our environment. We needed to, as human beings, that's one of the things that compared to pretty much every other creature on this planet, is that no other animal has been able to exert as much control over their environment. And again, you could argue, you know, whether that's right or that's wrong. That's not something I'm getting into right now. I'm just saying that it's a fact that no other creature on this planet has been able to exert as much control over their environment as a human being. So we have this tendency, which is born out of our desire for survival, to control. That's in our nature. And what we need to be careful with is, as this desire to maintain control evolves, it can start to bleed into controlling our own thoughts and our own feelings to a point where it is not healthy. And again, we're tying back to where we started. So how does Don't Know Mind help with this? What is Don't Know Mind, and what is this? Well, one of my favorite things, and again, this is my interpretation of Don't Know Mind, my understanding of it, okay? It's not the absolute correct interpretation, but the point is, I believe, is that mind, okay, the way that I use the term, and I believe the way you hear about it in Zen, it's always moving. Always moving. That is the nature of mind. I've heard mind, and I think I've said it here before, it's been described as like a monkey mind, right? It's always hopping around, jumping from tree to tree, from branch to branch on a tree, jumping into this, jumping into that, getting distracted with this, chasing a butterfly. It's always moving. It's always moving. And I think one of the aims of meditation is to watch that kind of movement, just to watch it. And amazingly, if you try to go forward with this metaphor a little bit more, which may sound a little ridiculous, but I hope it works for you. If you try to grab this monkey and control it, stop it from moving, you're going to have a hard time. You're going to have a really hard time. But I think an even better way to put it is that the mind is like a stream, okay? And that's one of the reasons I like calling this Sunday thing our Zen stream, right? It's a stream, right? Thoughts are always rising and falling. You literally could use a metaphor of if you're standing or sitting by a stream, right, a river just going by. That's like the mind. It's always moving, thoughts always passing through, always emotions rising and falling, thoughts coming and going, always moving, moving, moving. It's never completely one thing, right? And this is why I often like to say that mind, okay, cannot really grasp the true nature of our reality, which is very, very still. It's not moving, right? And this is something we can tap into when we are meditating, when we have been meditating for a long time. Our mind is always still moving, but we are connected to something that is beyond it, right? I like to call it consciousness. It's the awareness that allows mind to arise, to just be there. But what we don't want is we don't want our consciousness to get sucked up into that movement, and that can happen because of our desire to control it. So it's almost like jumping into this river and trying to grab the water. You just like jump in there and you're putting your arms out. You're trying to stop the water from moving. You're trying to keep the water in this section. Oh, I like this water. I want this water. I want more of this kind of water. Oh, I want less of this kind of water, right? And that's just not the nature of mind, right? Mind is never just one thing that you can grab and hold on to. I remember there's a very funny little quick story I heard of a Zen student and a Zen master. And I don't remember exactly where this comes from, but the punchline is basically this. The student runs up to the master and says, "Oh, master, I just had the worst sitting meditation. My mind was all over the place. It was jumping. I couldn't focus on my breath. My body was so uncomfortable. It was horrible." And the master says, "Don't worry, you know, it'll pass. You'll have another sitting in the future, and this issue will disappear." So then a few days later, the same student comes running back in. He says, Master, I had the best sitting. It was so good. I was so clear. My body was so still. I felt so at one with the universe. It was the best experience I ever had." And the master says, "Don't worry, it will pass." And I love that little story because it really points to a truth, is that you have a good sitting, you have a good thought, a good feeling, a bad feeling, they all pass, they all move, they all keep going. And so when we start talking about this don't know mind, it's basically a sort of an affirmation or a declaration that I'm never going to really grasp this with my thinking. I'm never really going to find a particular point in that river or in that stream that I can stop and say, "I know, now I got it, this is it." It doesn't happen. It's an illusion. And our desire to always want that is one of the biggest stumbling blocks, or at least it has been in my past, of actually, ironically, getting to some state of I guess understanding or peace or connection, maybe is a better word. It has been completely letting go of that need to know. I've often heard it said in other schools of thought. I don't remember who said it, to be honest, but I know I heard it somewhere. It wasn't not my original idea. Somebody said, "I know," are two of the most poisonous words in communication. Is that when you tell somebody, you're hearing somebody say something, you say, "Yeah, I know that, I know that already." It's basically what you're really saying is that you're shutting off any new information from coming in, right? And it's something that we just need to be careful with. So with this don't know mind, you are basically staying 100% open, just open to thoughts that come, thoughts that go, emotions that come, emotions that go. We're just letting it all flow by like that river, like that stream. And I found yesterday, sitting there for a good 7 hours or so, that was very helpful for me. And it's something that I am now trying to apply a little bit more today and hopefully going forward. So I decided I'd come on here and share it with you in the hopes that it would, get you to think about that and hopefully help you in your practice. So I hope that you found the content of today's episode helpful. Again, if you want to reach out to me, just use the methods I described a little bit ago. And stay tuned. I'll be back on Tuesday with another installment of Tuesday Taoism. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day.